Ninth of high school ministry, 12th year in youth ministry. Last year was the first year in years and years and years that I led a small group. I took on my own high school fellas. We met on Wednesday nights, and I didn't want to do that at first because I didn't want any of you to think that I have favorites, all right? Like, those are special fellas. What's happened since then is any competition we've done, and any competition that's been put together by Mission, it looks shady because my guys keep winning everything. Like every single thing we do, we could do like a spelling. Well, no, that wouldn't work. Sorry, pal. But just about anything, that's what we should do. Anything we do, these guys keep winning. Like even last night, we did this stupid thing where I gave away like a pizza in the crowd and one of my boys won. And I'm like, I feel. So this year, you need to take this away from my boys. You need to snatch it from their hands. I will admit this, last year, I helped put together the couch that won. And when I say helped, I mean I stood in the garage while Matt McGonigal drilled it together and clapped and cheered and wiped his brow. So this year, we're going to put one together. We're going to put one together, and we'll see how it goes. This is very machismo, very macho, manly, like, oh, he needs to prove something because he didn't get enough hugs from his dad. Like, thing, it's less of that and more like a ridiculous opportunity for you to grab a couch from someone. Get a couch somewhere. Like, you shouldn't pay more than like $20 for a couch. Go to Goodwill and be like, 60 is stupid. Crazy. Don't call the Goodwill worker stupid. Talk them down. Get a $20 couch. Put some wheels on that thing. Go Hello Kitty on it if you want to. And just have some. We're not Hello Kitty. But you can do whatever you want. A couple things I want to be very clear on. There's going to be like a winner that gets this thing, and you actually get to keep it. This is a different trophy than last year. You'll keep this and put it somewhere and brag about it. And when you're, you know, older, maybe it'll still mean, I don't know. You get this thing. But you can come and just bring like the most ridiculous couch on the planet and have some fun, push it around, or you can skip the whole thing as far as couch wise and just come and cheer. We're thinking about putting like bleachers up this year because last year was just a hit. All these people came out and brought like lawn chairs and were watching, and so we're like, yo, let's rent some bleachers and throw them up and just have a good time. And so we're going to be talking to a couple MCs to make it a little more fun, and I'm going to get off the mic. That'll help. But today we're going to start a new series. I want to jump in with this. This really is, I've been hyping this a little bit on like Twitter and Facebook and stuff, because I think today could be a pivotal turning point in our ministry. Now, there's a lot of us here, and that's fun. There's a bunch of us here last night. There's probably 120, 130 of us here too. There's probably about twice that this morning. So there's a bunch of us. But within about 5 miles of us, within about 5 miles of Mission right now, there's probably anywhere from 10 to 15,000 high school students. Like from just, you just put a little circle on the map on Google and you look at how many people are in this place, in this city, going to schools around us from the big schools to homeschools. There's probably 10 to 15,000 high school students. And I'm going to estimate that maybe half of them are plugged into a local church. And of that crowd, those are about maybe what? Half of that crowd knows Jesus. There's another half of the crowd that maybe knows like a version of Jesus. It's a little bit different than ours. But they need to know Jesus. We don't have the market on Jesus. He's bigger than my book here. But we have some incredible opportunity over the next few weeks to do something. Because here's what's going to happen. Something crazy is in the air. And I don't mean from the farms. But this week, something happens. And we just have to stop and pause and go, man, something's happening. Every single August, no matter what we do, even if we do nothing, our church gets jam-packed. Every single August, our church grows. It's the craziest thing. You go back to school, and then folks go back to church. And maybe you're the result of that. Something in the air is like, you know what happened. You're like, we should go to church. And that's an incredibly beautiful thing. And it's happening over here in the other room too, I'm sure. And I'm sure the children's ministry is crazy. And I'm sure there's two-year-olds throwing a riot right now. But something's in the air, and we can pinpoint it. It's going to happen next weekend. Like next weekend is going to be bonkers here. We're going to get rid of these black things on the side. We're going to get as many chairs in here as we can because something's going to happen. We're probably going to get 50 new students next week if we do nothing. Like if we do nothing. And that's cool. That's great. And I don't get paid more if I get more students. Like, right? I don't get paid more. I'm not like, oh, there's $1, $2, $3, $300 today. Yay. But what I do is I know that I have this responsibility to share the gospel with as many people as I possibly can in my life. Because there's good news to be shared, not advice, not tips, not morals necessarily, but a gospel, a good news. And I have a sense of urgency. I have a sense of urgency when it comes to sharing that. And I pray that you do as well. Because Jesus has a sense of urgency when it comes to getting the gospel out. today is for those of you that would call yourselves Christians. I know that we're in mixed company and some of you are just checking us out. Totally a safe place to do that. If you would call yourself a Christian today, today is for you. I have a challenge for you. It's a very simple challenge. I'm gonna put it out there and I'm gonna ask you to do something with it, and you can or you can ignore it. But today, I want you to have a sense of urgency with me. And specifically for this coming weekend, this one that's coming up, we're gonna do a little preparation today. Yeah, we're gonna plan a winter camp after this, and we're gonna have some fun with that. We only ordered enough pizza to feed 35, and so if you don't wanna come, that's cool. Or if you're fasting, right on, you can come. But the urgency that I want to push today is the same one that Jesus has. Who in Luke chapter 19, in the Gospel of Luke, said, look, here's why I exist. He said, I have come to seek, to find, and to save the lost. Jesus said it. He said it so clearly. He said, I've come to seek and to save the lost. And so Jesus, when he was a man, for 3 years, you see him going after people who are clearly lost. And the people that think they're found, the people that think they're in, the people that think they're okay, and have all this pride and all this ugliness in their heart, he's kind of keeping them at distance, like, look, if you don't need me, fine. But then he goes after these people that are hurting and broken and clearly lost, and he's like, come in, come be with me, come sit with me. He's giving them forgiveness and just handing it out and doling it out with this intensity, just intensity. It kind of like I was in a basketball tournament this last week, and it was the championship game, and I didn't contribute much to get us to that point, but it was a Tempe league I was in. It was Monday night, last Monday night. My wife came, and she brought her two boys, and some of the other players' wives came, and they brought their kids. We're at Kiwanis Park. Anyone ever been to Kiwanis inside? It's like got that wave pool. Paint a picture. It's got a massive wave pool in one section of it, which I was kicked out of for life in the eighth grade, and I looked different because I walked in like, oh, snap, they're going to find me, but I was literally kicked out for some disgusting reasons, and apparently I looked different than I did when I was 14. So I roll in every week to play hoops here. Championship game, not last Monday night. Lindsay's there, and if you're new, I've got a two-year-old who's sitting like this high, and then a one-year-old who's sitting like this high. He just eats, and so he doesn't move really fast yet, like barely. He's just staggering. He's just all meat. He just... But Griffin, my two-year-old, is turbo. Broken move. He can just... He's wheels. And so when you bring him anywhere, you've either got to have him like harnessed in, or like you've got to have a team... Right, he's just quick, right? So in the parking lot, I'm always terrified because I feel like he's going to... Whoop. So on Monday night in the championship game, I'm playing in the game and I'm kind of noticing them a little bit once in a while. And maybe I'm sitting on the bench for a minute and I look over and I'm watching them and they're just being cute and having fun. And then I get back in the game and I'm running up and down the court doing whatever. And all of a sudden my one-year-old's on the court, like in the game. He's like just kind of staggering over to the court. And I'm like, that's not good. He's clueless. He's one, right? He's just looking for food. And I'm like, no, but buddy, you got to get back. And so I run over there like during the game and something's going on. And I'm like, where's Lindsay? And one of the other wives goes, she's left. She went out to try to find Griffin. I'm like, what? I'm like running. What do you mean? And I'm totally ignoring and it doesn't matter because I can't score. But I'm terrified because Griffin's gone. He has found a way to not only leave the gym. My wife is an incredible mom, all right? She's an incredible... He is just a ninja, all right? So I'm not knocking her at all. He's just gone. Disappears, all right? And then she has gone after him. She's been gone for a couple minutes, and I'm terrified, and I'm just figuring out, like, what's going on? And there's, like, a foul over here, and they've been gone for a few minutes, and I'm like, I gotta go. And so someone's on the bench. I'm like, you gotta get in the game. And so I, like, run away from the game, and I run out into the hallway, and at Kiwanis, there's a massive wave pool, and then the basketball gyms are over here, and then there's this, like, corridor of hallways that you have to, like, weave through to get out. It's, like, going up and around, and it's, like, going crazy, and you've got to go this way and then this way and then this way and then hook a right if you want to leave. It's like a maze, and that little punk found his way out. He went all the way through all the hallways, walked past all of the employees. He's two. What were they like? Have a great day, sir. Like, what was he? He's two, walking out, walks through the lobby. We learn later, through the lobby into the parking lot. My two-year-old has run amok. And I'm terrified. You're not going to understand this fear until you have your own kids and you can't find them. When your kid is lost, it's literally the most terrifying feeling in the world. And so I went running out, and immediately we found him. He's just like clueless that he was absolutely, positively in harm's way. I was going nuts, freaking out, scared. And that sort of urgency that I felt, that sort of, that I've got to find my son, is exactly the sense of urgency that God has for the lost, for his kids that are straying and are wandering. That's the exact sort of feeling that he feels on an infinitely higher level than I ever will, to seek and to save those that are lost. And to understand that, look, Christians, folks, like, you once were lost, but now are found. The distinction is that you have placed your faith in Jesus. You have become his kid. You're his child. You're a child of God. No longer lost, found. Maybe you're still a mess, and so am I. You're not better than anyone else. You've just found Jesus, and he's found you because he was pursuing you. That's beautiful. But the thing is that these lost people, we're not better than them. There's no sort of varsity level Christian, right? But folks that don't know God need to know him. They need Jesus. This is so basic, right? They need Jesus. He's not some sort of add-on to the suburban life. He is the way and the truth and the life and salvation, saving from eternal condemnation, comes from no one else but him. Yes, he offers us a beautiful way to live this life. Yes, his life is a fantastic model to be followed. Yes, he taught us amazing ethics and amazing ways of treating one another and amazing ways. All that's true, absolutely. But he died on a cross to forgive the sins of the billions of people he created who have betrayed him and chosen their own way and have ignored him in big ways and small ways, and he just looked, I'm going to take the first step here. I'm going to say I love you first. I'm going to prove it in the cross. I'm going to give you the news that can save your soul. And then when he did, he said, now go tell everybody. Go tell everybody. Go tell everybody that there's hope. Go tell everybody that there's healing. Go tell everybody that they're not condemned, that I took the punishment. Go tell everybody that I love them. Go tell them. Now, even before he died, people were drawn to him. Even before the cross, men and women were seeing something in Jesus that they needed and wanted. And they were even seeing him and going, dude, we got a friend that needs to know this. We got a friend that's got to know this. We got a friend who's hurting and he's got to feel this. We got a friend who needs to get to Jesus. You see this perfectly in Mark chapter 2. So I want you to grab your Bible or your Bible app, whatever you got going. And in Mark chapter 2, you're going to see why we named this series Through the Roof. Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, those are the four gospels. This is written by Mark, chapter 2, super early on. Jesus is like 30 years old. He's really just started his ministry. He's just started walking around, just started teaching publicly, started like, he's got his like role now. He's a pastor in this crowd. He's actually a rabbi, more accurately. Jesus was Jewish. You're like, well, you know, he's Christian. Mark chapter 2, I'll explain that some other day, but he's a teacher. But he's not just some old teacher. He's not just like me. He's like a healer. He's doing amazing, incredible things, and people are noticing. And so he's done some rad stuff. Like, there's a man with leprosy just now. Right before that, he drives out an evil spirit. That'd be sick. There's some sweet things he's doing. Mark chapter 2, look what he does, man. I'm gonna start this. I'm only going to get 5 verses. It says, a few days later, when Jesus again entered Capernaum, so he goes back to the city Capernaum, the people heard that he had come home, all right? So many people gathered that there was no room left. All right, so you think it's crowded today? No, like picture like another 300 of us. It says, some men came in verse 3, bringing to him, Jesus, a paralytic. So this man is paralyzed, cannot walk. And he was carried by 4 of them. All right, so be there. Like, don't just read it. Kind of enter the story. Try to picture this. Jesus is in a house. It says he's home. So it's either his house or more likely probably Peter's or one of the disciples. He's crashing a house. He's preaching. It's a house church. He's hanging out in a house preaching. He's teaching them the way of God. Who knows what he's saying? Nobody wrote that part down in that moment. But he's teaching this crowd, and he's so attractive. People love this guy. They're just coming to him going, we want to hear what you've got to say. We want to hear what you've got to say. And they're whispering, did you hear what he did? Did you hear what he did? He healed that guy. He healed all those people. He's doing these incredible things. And so he jam-packs this room. He's super popular right now, all right? A few years later, they're going to kill him. But right now, he's a good day. Good day. Jam-packed. They're trying to do a head count. They're like, do we count that guy already? What is it, 60, 70? Like, he crowds a house. Like, all right, now, You have a hard time picturing this because you live in Gilbert. Maybe Queen Creek or Tempe or Chandler. A lot of you have like a really nice house, like 3, 4, 5 bedrooms, an extra room where you just put your crap. Like we've got all sorts of room, like a garage where you don't even park a car because you got so much stuff. Right? Anybody else? Me too. Like we have these really nice houses, but you got to picture 2,000 years ago, the kind of house we're talking about. Like the kind of house Jesus is going to be hanging out in is probably going to be like a 12 by 12 structure, probably handmade bricks, probably thatch roofing, probably like mud, like that they hardened and baked and tried to get it to turn into a roof. And if you ever wanted to get on the roof back in the day, you had to put a ladder on the outside of your house, lean that puppy up, like a wooden ladder that you put together out of like tree trunks. You want to put that on the side of the house, and if you ever needed to get up to the top of the roof to fix it or whatever, you'd have to climb that ladder. Now, this scene is crazy because it says, here comes these four guys. They've got a friend who's sitting on a mat. Super familiar story to a lot of us. And then it gets ridiculous. Since then, it says, verse 4, since they could not get him to Jesus because of the crowd, they made an opening in the roof. They went through the roof. They made this opening in the roof above Jesus, and after digging through it, lowered the mat and the paralyzed man was laying on. When Jesus saw their faith, he said to the paralytic, son, your sins are forgiven. Craziest thing in the world, because this is super awkward. Like if you come to my house over on Brook Street, and you can't get in the front door, so you grab a jackhammer and go through my roof, I'm going to go, back door, stupid. There's a back door, there's a side door, there's a garage door. You can go through a window. You can do any. In this scene, these guys are so desperate, and they just don't care. They had to be teenage guys. Because, I mean, one of them had to get this idea, like, what are we going to do? I've got it. And they grab their buddy on the mat, and he's like, where are we going? What are we doing? And they take this man. How do you get a man on a mat up a ladder on the side of a house? Can we work through the logistics of that? Like, pivot! Pivot! You're like, what are you going to do in that moment? Anybody? All right, thank you. Okay. Inside jokes are no fun, friends. See what I did there? Dang, I'm smart. So they get the man up there, and then they go, what are we going to do now? Well, we got to get in there. Well, it's a roof. On the other side is the ceiling. And underneath that are people. There's human beings under there listening to a sermon. Like, I've been distracted up here before. You have too. When the monsoons come, you're like a bunch of kindergartners. Like, and I'm up here preaching or teaching or something, all of a sudden there's some thunder. You're like, oh my God. Like, Instagram's blowing up. Hey, did you hear that? Yes, we heard it. We heard it. It's outside. It's booming. I feel like I have to roll the garage up and just go play, kids. Go play. Recess. Go play. But I've never had anyone try to come through the roof. I've never had anyone so desperate to get in this place that they were like, yo, grab a shovel. And I've never been a part of a crowd where I had to deal with like dirt clumps hitting me in the head as I tried to hear a lesson. And I've never seen anybody come like with a dude on a deal and lower him down. Like, I've seen some awkward things. But these guys are relentless. They're willing to literally tear apart a house to get someone to Jesus. Because they know why. Why? They believe something about Jesus. They believe that if they can get their friend to him, that he's got a chance. They believe that if they can just get him in the room with this pastor, with this teacher, that maybe there's hope for him. They have no idea what Jesus is capable of. They just put their hope in him, right? They don't know what he's going to do. He might get like mad at him and be like, put the roof back. You know, he might get upset. But what he does is he looks, what does he do? Because this blows up my theological framework, and I don't mean to mess you up, but it hurts. Mark 2, he sees their faith. He sees their relentlessness. He sees their passion. He sees their dedication. He sees their love for their friend. He sees their absolute dependence on him. He sees them going, you're our only hope. You're our only hope. You're his only hope. He sees that in them and forgives their friend's sins. He didn't pray a prayer. He didn't go to church. He actually kind of did go to church. He broke into the church. He committed burglary to get to church. But he didn't go through any of the Romans chapter 3, Romans chapter 6, Romans chapter 8, Romans chapter 10. He didn't do any of that. His friend's faith, his friend's relentlessness, his friend's love for him saved him. Now, all right, now Jesus saved him. That's better theology. I don't want to send you off like, I can save my friends. No. But you can tear the roof off a place to get him to Jesus, or you can invite him right here. something's in the air this week. Something crazy's happening. If we do nothing, we'll have 50 new people here next week. If we do something, we might need more chairs. What if we had the faith of these four friends? And what if we were relentless? Now, this is only going to happen if you feel like you have something worth saying, and if you have a faith worth sharing. And if you do, what if? Now, for this guy, listen, he's got broken legs. I'm going to finish the story next week, but what we need to understand is that when he got his sins forgiven, he probably thought a couple things like, but my legs, I don't, thanks, buddy. That's great, but I can't walk. But Jesus knew that his suffering and all suffering is rooted in man's separation from God. Jesus understood that he had a greater need than his legs working. So Jesus went right to the source of it, and he reconciled and fixed this man's relationship with God, namely himself, forgave his sins. And I'm going to finish the story next week, but your friends don't need a feel-good sort of sermon. Your friends don't need like the Barnes & Noble self-help section. Your friends don't need five fantastic ways to finish school fairly. Like, they don't need, like, they need the gospel. Like, think of all of your hurting friends. Think of all the things that they're facing. Think of all the things that they're going through right now. The solution is Jesus. Think of all the hurt that you're going to see, like, depravity on Wednesday. Some of you are already in school. You're gonna see darkness firsthand, right? You're going to see people who desperately need Jesus. Now listen, there's good news. He's available. He's here. He's not just here. But guess what I'm going to do next week? I'm going to finish the story. And I'm going to talk about Jesus, the hope of the world, who saves people freely, everybody, because he loves the world, loves them all, not just church folk. For God so loved the world. And then he says to you and to me, tell everyone. In Romans chapter 10, I want you to own this verse with me, all right? Romans chapter 10, I want you to go there. We're going to finish on this. The Apostle Paul was relentless. This dude had my job, basically, except he traveled. So he's a pastor, he's a teacher. And I'm not saying, yo, me and Paul are like this. Paul was relentless. Paul had this message. He had this hope. He had this gospel. And in Romans chapter 10, he's already laid out just the beauty of the gospel. And he's going to go, look, now go tell everyone. And watch what he says in Romans chapter 10. I'm just going to grab one verse, kind of zoom in and zoom right back out. In Romans chapter 10, verse 14, he goes, look, how then can they call on the one they have not believed in? Like, you can't call on anyone you don't believe in or know. And how can they believe in the one of whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without someone preaching to them? It's so basic. Like, your friends have no shot at hearing it if someone doesn't tell them something. Your friends have no shot at hearing the gospel unless someone tells them what the gospel is. Now, in high school, what this means for you is you can bring them into this place. Like, that's step one. Invite them to church. Like, who can you invite to church so that they hear this gospel, so that they hear about Jesus? Who? Who has God placed in your life that you can invite to church? And will they hear this if you don't? I don't want to live with sort of like a maybe faith. I want to live with I'm absolutely convicted and compelled to be a part of this. I'm absolutely committed to this thing. In my life, I absolutely am too. And so what I did is I set a reminder just last night, and I just, in my little iPhone reminders, just because I'm going to need this, I set it up, and it's the only one I have. And I just set up a prayer reminder that's going to repeat every single day at 8 o'clock. You can do 9 o'clock if that's too early. I just said, Father, please open up an opportunity for me to tell someone about you today. Every morning I'm going to get that. Every morning I'm going to get it. I'm going to put it on my radar, and I'm going to pray, and I'm going to go, God, it's easy for me on Sundays. But today when I'm at Starbucks, and today when I'm wherever I am at Target, today when I'm hanging out with some friends that don't know you, give me an opportunity. I'm just going to be praying that. I'm giving you the easiest opportunity on the planet. Invite them to church next weekend. And I promise you, they will hear as best I can the gospel. And so will you. And so if you're just visiting today and going, what? Come back next week. I want to help you with this. Like, imagine this. Imagine I got cancer. That's the most random response to something like that. He's like, this sermon's too long. I hope you die. Okay, let me try to redeem this moment. Imagine that happened, okay? And it's happened in your family, perhaps in this crowd this big. It's happened to you. It's been a terrifying thing. Imagine that I got cancer and I was told that the news is no good. This is not going to end well. Imagine I live in a world where people aren't getting healed from cancer. They're just dying. There's just no hope for them. But imagine that I find a place that can heal me. And I go to this place and I meet a doctor and this guy can fix my problem. He can heal me of my cancer. So imagine I go to this doctor and I get healed from my cancer and I'm alive again. It's gone. And I'm just alive. I've got the rest of my life in front of me. I'm now alive. This does not own me anymore. I'm free of cancer. I'm totally healed. Now imagine that I go back to my neighborhood and my family and my friends and I meet other people with cancer. What would I do? If I knew of a place and I knew of a doctor who could heal them from this sickness that's going to end in death, what would I do? I'd have a few options. My option is, number one, I can, you know, go back to that doctor's office maybe every Saturday or every Sunday once a week, and we could start singing songs about how we don't have cancer anymore. We could maybe even meet on like Wednesday nights and all huddle up in homes and talk about, isn't it amazing that we don't have cancer anymore? This is fantastic. Let's talk about that doctor. Let's write some songs. Maybe we could even all like have some fun and like create silly events where we push, you know, like beds around a parking lot with wheels on it and just celebrate the fact that we no longer have cancer. Oh my gosh. And we would probably try to avoid people with cancer, right? Because who knows, like it could rub off on us. We could get it. We would probably ask them to stay away, right? Don't you want to kind of punch that person in that illustration? Like, you selfish, horrible, right? I would never want to be that person if I had been cured from cancer. You understand what that illustration means? Like, if I was in junior high, I'd be like, okay, kids, now what the cancer represents. No, it's crystal clear what this is talking about. It's saying, you Christian, you're not religious. You're not someone who just is like attending sort of a club. If so, this is a weird hobby. You are identified as someone who has received the forgiveness that only Christ extends, and now you're an ambassador. That's what Paul calls you. You're a representative. You are a herald. You are someone who has this information, and it's now your job to go and tell everyone you possibly can that there is a way. There is a way to be healed. There is a way to take everything that's broken, all the secrets, all that, there's someone who can heal you. His name is Jesus, and your friends need to know. In the same way that when I was driving down the 101, just not too long ago, it was a few years ago, I was driving down the 101, I was heading north into Scottsdale, going somewhere at night, it was like 10 o'clock, and I'm driving and I see this, like, something crazy is happening in front of me and I can't really tell what it is, and I get a little closer and it's a guy on a motorcycle. He's on like a sport bike and he's fully like tucked in. He's probably doing like 75, 80, so I got to kind of cook to get to him, and I want to catch up to him because I'm going, what's up with this dude? He's on fire. Like, he's literally on fire. Specifically, he's riding his motorcycle, clueless to the fact that wedged underneath the bike is like a box or something that has gotten stuck underneath, and it caught fire because of his engine. And he's literally like, A, the coolest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was like, oh, when I catch up to him and realize, holy cow, you're on fire. We're doing 75 or 80. He's wearing a helmet. He's fully tucked into his little fetal position going fast. But I'm like, homie's on fire. Like, you're going to die. Because what's going to happen when the fire gets to the thing and the wires where the gas goes? Kaboo. Like, it's going to be S'moreville on the 101 with this guy. And so I'm rolling my window down. And I'm like trying to get his attention, like pointing down. And he's like, yeah, pretty sick bike, huh? Or something like that. And I'm like, no, you don't understand. And I begin to like kind of panic. Like, I'm going to watch a man explode on the 101 on his bike. And he's going to get his legs. I want to laugh, but I also don't want to, like, watch you burn. And I'm kind of interested, but I think you're heading towards destruction. And so I begin to honk my horn, which turns out to be, like, the worst horn in the world. And my last guy's like, like somebody's, like, getting choked in the backseat. Like, That's a bad illustration. I'm going to stick to my notes. And I'm panicked for this man because I see where he's going, but he has no idea. I see where he's going, but he is clueless. And so I'm freaking out. And so I eventually like use my knee and I'm like, ah, ah. And he's like, oh. Like if he had a phone, he'd call the police. But I remember just doing everything I could to get him to understand. And I'm like, look, wheels, look, wheels, freaking out, losing my mind. And finally he looks down, he's like, ah! Like pulls over, like runs away from his bikes, like tapping his butt. I'm like, bro, you were on fire. He's like, hey, thanks, man. Man, what would have happened if you wouldn't have said anything? I'd have like, you would have melted. Bro, you would be melted. You'd be dead. Okay. Stupid illustration to make a point. Stupid illustration to make this point. What I do know about Jesus, and all I know is that he extends forgiveness that needs to be received as a gift. What I don't fully understand, and I don't want to fully understand, and I don't want to live with maybe faith, is what happens when someone does not receive that forgiveness from Jesus. That is not our debate to answer today, but what I know is that the consequences of rejecting Jesus in this life, it's not a good ending to the story. It's not somewhere you want your friends to end up. Can we play it safe and point them to the love of God? Can we just do everything we can to get their attention and to invite them, maybe to tell them if you've got that boldness and you're ready to do that? But can we be those kinds of friends who will do anything? We'll go through the roof. So look, this week, what does that look like for you? It means you do anything you possibly can. It means on your school campus, you see things differently this week. You see that hallway differently. Who you end up sitting next to in your first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh hours, you see that opportunity differently. You see social networking differently. You see it all as an opportunity to tell people. Hey, you can tell them about Jesus. Go for it. Go. Or you can go, dude, you should check out this church I go to. You should come this week. And I won't be awkward. I'll probably be awkward. But I'm gonna do everything I can to share the best news, the news that everyone needs to hear next week. I'm going to create the most sort of loving presentation I possibly can of the gospel. I'm going to finish Mark 2. I'm going to read the rest of that story. And I'm going to invite people to put their faith in Jesus. But I can't do it without you because I don't go to your school. I could be like become a narc and go to Highland on Wednesday. Like, what's up? You guys know where the English building is? I do not look like a high school student anymore. You will never have this kind of opportunity again. You'll never have this kind of opportunity again. In the rest of your life, you'll never be around this many people who, if you invited them to church, they would probably say yes. How do I know that? Because I'm a convicted felon who passed every single background check this church has because of everything I did in high school and the few years after. And when high school came, I went to church because Josh Blocker invited me and seeds were planted. I was a dirtbag. I was hungover. I was looking for girls to hook up with, but I went to church. Because someone invited me and seeds were planted. And I got saved because of some kid who was bold enough to go, Ryan, you should come to church with me and my family this week. Okay. I was the least likely person. Think of the biggest dirtbag on your campus. My resume of dirtbagness trumps his. And yours may too. He's going to go, you go to church? Yeah, crazy thing. You should come. I'm going to invite the band up and we're going to close with just one song that I want to lay over these next few weeks as our anthem, as the song we kind of own, the song that sort of defines our efforts here. So you can put your stuff away. You can just relax for a moment. You may want to stand and sing with these guys. But my hope is that your posture is whatever you need to sing these words and mean it. There's going to be a part in this song that goes, shout it. Go on, just scream it from the mountains. Go tell it to the masses that he is God. Now, if one or two of us sign up for that, it could be an amazing weekend next week. But if 350, 400 of us this weekend sign up for that, God might do something. How will they hear if someone doesn't tell them? I'm going to pray, and these guys are going to lead us in one quick song. Father, just make us relentless. Help us not to care what anyone thinks. Help us to love you more than people's opinions, but help us to love others enough to invite them to come in here. Put people in our minds right now that maybe we could even text in the next day or two or call or invite to lunch or Help us to find moments on the patio and in the hallways and in our classes, in our homes, wherever we go, to invite people into this story. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks, guys.